Welcome to the Round 5 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by Dunny.
G'day everyone.
And we've got irregular sort of guest of the show, but he's been on a few times in the past, and that's CJ. Welcome back to the show, mate.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
All right, as we do each week, we'll go around with our teams and how we've scored for the week before getting into the show. The questions are a bit more streamlined this week than they have been in the first few weeks, where we've had just a glut of players that are outperformed over a three-week stretch or a two-week stretch. This week, it's more about the underperforming players, whether or not you trade them out. Unfortunately, not a whole bunch of rookies on the bubble this week. I think Caulfield looks like the only one, which is a little bit unfortunate, so a bit lighter on in the rookie department as well. But before we get into the guts of the show, let's go around with a quick update with our teams. Dunny, why don't you kick us off, mate?
Yeah, I've had three really good weeks, but this week not quite so good for me. Obviously, a few underperformers on field, but I think a lot of people would have had those. I finished the week with 2,056. Puts my ranking to be 7,500. I think I dropped like 3,000 spots this week, which is a bit disappointing. But for me, I had Fritch on the ground with his 58. Jacobs is looking like a failed experiment for me with his 69. Holman on field with his 32, but I'm sure I'm not alone there. But on the flip side, I did loophole Martin's 141, so I was pretty happy with that. Well, a few issues, but I don't think they're terminal issues for my team just at the moment. Just a few rookies not scoring what we've been seeing. But I think we've said all along so far, Marcus, this year that the scoring in the first three rounds has been a lot higher than we'd normally see at this time of the year.
Yeah, it certainly has been. And we've been blessed with a few backline rookies that have been chiming along. And Holman and Kelly have had a brilliant start. So a bit more of a return to form with some rookies putting in, you know, the odd poor game as they recover from soreness or just lack the consistency that a more experienced player does have. So yeah, I went a little bit better, Dunny, but not a huge amount more. So 2090 for myself. I missed trading Liam Ryan out, which was a little bit annoying, but that forced me to reconsider who I needed to trade in as a rookie, because I needed to get rid of Ryan eventually, and there were no forward line rookies on the horizon. So I ended up biting the bullet and trading out Billings. He had Geelong last week, and he has GWS next week, and with a break even of about 160 last week, I thought it's time to bite the bullet with a bit of a missed opportunity with trading Ryan out, and that worked out okay. I brought Henry in, got cold feet on Asava. In the end, only sacrificed, you know, the 15, 16 points on field with Henry. And now I'm in a position this week to potentially bring in the Robbie Gray type, which is pretty cool. Christensen was awesome with a 98. That made me smile. Goldstein was disappointing with 76. Holman with a 32 was a pain in the ass because I passed on Dusty as captain so that I didn't have to take Brayshaw. And I'm sure a lot of us were in this scenario. CJ and I were watching the game on Sunday and he expressed the same frustration. So that wasn't brilliant. Took Selwood as captain in the end. He got tagged for the second game in a row and ended up only with a 92. So could have been better, but certainly not the end of the world. For my ranking, though, it certainly looks like I'm about to fall off a cliff. So I've pushed out another 2,000 spots. So I'm currently sitting at the 19,000 mark, just within the top 20,000. This has got to be one of my worst starts for the year so far, but that's all right. Plenty of time to turn it around. 27 trades left, so just keep positive. Siege, how'd you go with your team, mate?
I actually scraped together the highest score of the week for the three of us, which is amazing considering it was only 21.36.
Nice.
Which is not particularly good, but that's all right. I'm sitting bang on 8,400th for my season rank. Nick Natanui seems to be going halfway okay with a 92. Bit of a slight unique in the ruck there.
Better than Goldstein.
Yeah, better than Goldstein, that's for sure. Billings on field was absolutely horrendous. But Tim Taranto scored 116 and made me not feel quite so bad about trading Stephenson to him 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm actually ahead on that trade despite thinking that it had all gone pear-shaped after Friday night.
Yeah, it must have been a bit of a roller coaster.
Oh, shocking.
All right, we'll move on to the actual questions now, and we'll start off with the rookies. The first question here is from Charles Herzog, one of our patrons. Should we let non-playing rookies, i.e. Barry and Murphy, stay on bench if they're not picked, or should we move them on to playing rookies? Mira, Guelphy, Caulfield, etc. So good first question to start off on, because there were a couple of team sheet surprises after the podcast last week, namely Murphy with the late news of hamstring tightness, but that was only looking like a 1, maybe 2 week layoff. And then we've got Barry, who was very disappointingly dropped and frustrating for me because I traded him in only just 1 week before. So extremely frustrating there. As I mentioned at the top of the show, there's only one rookie on the bubble being Caulfield this week. So don't know how hot I am on moving a week early on a Mira and Guelphy type when they might be dropped in a similar way to Barry, but certainly tempting to move on non-playing players for Caulfield this week, who looked like a standout rookie on the weekend. Albeit the fact that St Kilda were getting absolutely pumped, so the ball's coming in his direction a fair bit, which as Geelong supporters, both CJ and I did enjoy. What are your thoughts, gents? Non-playing players, are you looking to move them on? Are you happy to hold on? I'm guessing Murphy being likely to rejoin the team in another week is one that we are more likely to keep.
Not super sold on whether Barry's going to get another game. I think maybe Dunny would be better poised to answer this, but it seems like he didn't have a great game in the twos on the weekend, wasn't named in the best, so I can't really seem to recall this week.
I must admit, I haven't actually seen the stats from the Magpies game on the weekend yet, but I can tell you that it was an absolute shocker of a day here in Adelaide on Saturday when they played. From memory, the score of that game was horrifically low.
Wasn't it two goals 16 or something?
Yeah, it was, I think Port kicked 4-4 off the top of my head. Like, whatever it was, I think it was like 28 points apiece. It was a really shocking game. From all accounts. But look, I'm not convinced that he'll walk straight back into the team. I think he will come back at some point soon, though, in the next, you know, I'd say in the next 3 or 4 weeks. But, you know, if you're looking at someone like Murphy and Barry, you're actually going to be paying money to get to a Caulfield, because I think Caulfield, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I think he's...
Caulfield's at 171,300.
170, yeah. So you're paying 20K to get up to a Caulfield from those two guys at the moment. So I don't know that that's something you want to be doing. Personally, I've got both Murphy and Barry, and I'll be holding both of those guys for at least another week or two. At the moment, you know, at worst, they're a floating loophole for you until they come back. They've both got negative break-evens. I won't be moving them on unless I really need to.
Caulfield looks like a bit of a jet down back. St Kilda's backline are the only guys who are scoring any points for them at the moment, it seems.
Ball's down there quite a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. He looked pretty composed against the weekend. I was watching him pretty closely. He's been averaging 73. He's got a break even of negative 45. So despite being premium priced, I think of all the guys to look at, particularly given that we've only got Mira and Guelphy coming through next week, I think if you're looking for a rookie to trade in, Caulfield's a go. But I think people are more likely to trade him in if they're moving out one of your underperforming mid prices or maybe backline premiums, who we'll get to in a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I'd be looking to move on someone else rather than Murphy and Barry if I'm looking to bring Caulfield in, which is what I'll be doing probably this week. I'll be looking to find someone else who's underperforming rather than those two guys who've got money to make.
Yeah, Murphy for one seems like a silly one to move on if he could be back really soon and it wasn't dropped like Barry, where you're faced with an indefinite time out. Note that sort of Need can play a similar role, and he's been listed as emergency for a while, and I know that Pittard came back for his first game in the Magpies and was named in the best as well, is something to keep an eye out on. But I guess he plays a different spot to Barry, who plays a little bit more wing and spent a bit more time in the forward line as well, Dunny.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm hoping at least that because Port Adelaide lost, there's a chance that they shake things up a little bit. So we'll just have to wait and see. But no, I think I agree with your points that we should probably be looking for a different trade-out option, which brings us to the next question from the captain, one of our patrons. He has a couple of duds on the bench with players that are averaging around the 50 points for Supercoach and having a similar break-even of about 50 points. Now, there's quite a few expensive players that we've talked about previously. Brayshaw, Dow, LDU, and Norton as well, I suppose, is one of those. So there are a few players that potentially are early trade-out targets. Dunny, apart from Barry and Murphy, who we've already talked about, who else would you be potentially considering as early trade-out? Brayshaw, does he tempt you at all? He's unfortunately only played a maximum of about 60% game time for the first four rounds, so I think we have to go back to not trusting bloody Ross the Boss again or the Supercoach Terror.
Yeah, we've all loved Ross early this year because he kept telling us he's naming all his rookies, but then he's just not playing them. Personally, I am looking at Brayshaw to go down to Caulfield. It only makes me about 40 grand, which is disappointing, but Brayshaw's got a break even of 54, and that's the number that really worries me more than the amount of money that he's made so far. The way he's been going, I just can't see him scoring enough now to push up to sort of a $300,000 player, which is what we'd prefer to see before we move him on.
I think Brayshaw's the front runner, apart from Barry for mine. I'm probably tossing between the two. Norton would have been a fair chance, but the 78 looks all right. Now, my worry is that by trading out Brayshaw ahead of Barry, yes, Brayshaw looks very unlikely now, but imagine if he just manages to sink an 80 in next week and meanwhile Barry stays out of the team for the next month. All of a sudden, you're going to be sort of in a lot more pain having not dealt with the issue that Barry presents earlier on. Do you know how often you're playing on Sundays over the next few weeks, Dunny, in terms of Barry as a potential loophole player?
Off the top of my head, I don't, but I can quickly look that up for you, mate.
Sorry, I put you on the spot there.
You have.
I wouldn't know that for too long. So
you're playing Saturday. You pretty much only play Saturdays.
Mostly
you play
it is,
Saturday
yeah.
every single one of the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of Sunday games. In fact, our next Sunday game is the 15th of July.
Well, that's the other worry about Barry too, was that he wasn't hugely useful as a loophole player this week because he played in game two.
Yeah.
So only could really vice-captain loophole with Rory Laird, and you can only loophole with Adelaide rookies in the midfield. So that's one of my concerns about keeping Barry as a loophole player. It doesn't seem to be a great loophole player. So I haven't really made up my mind yet, but it's going to be between Brayshaw and Barry for me. Now, just before we move on to the underperforming players, a quick chat about Nick Caulfield. Is he basically a lock for both of you, or would you be concerned at all about the fact that he's costing about 50K more? From what you've said, CJ, he seems like he's already in your team.
Yeah, he's definitely coming in pretty soon. I think like most people, I had him pretty much all preseason. Seems like a pretty good pick, I think.
He's coming into my team this week. I think his scoring potential looks pretty good. I know we've been sucked in by that by other players in the past, but I think St Kilda, given the way they're looking at the moment, they need to get some games into these young guys, and I think he's one that they definitely want to do that with. So he'll be coming in for me. And at the moment, it's at the expense of Brayshaw, pending other disasters later in the week.
Considering that he's the only rookie on the bubble and he has that mid-depth flexibility, and a lot of us were considering starting him at the start of the year, there's sort of enough reasons that tick off him coming into my team this week. Also not hugely certain on when Higgins will be back or whether Mira and Guelphy will continue to get a string of games and be reliable rookie picks down the line. And a lot of us are facing with potentially underperforming rookies. At this stage, he seems like a fairly obvious pick. So I think I echo both your sentiments there. With that, we'll move off the rookies and into the trade out candidates. And this first question here is from Supercoach Cyan on Twitter. Is it time to part ways with Hibbard? So another reasonably disappointing game on the weekend from Hibbo, and he's now dropped a total of 66K down to 480K, which is disappointing for his owners. That's the third score that he's scored under 75, albeit those three have been 72, 73, and 74. So it's not like he's going too awfully, but certainly it seems like the move down back of Lewis and Lever joining their back line has not helped him a huge amount. Before round three, they talked about freeing Hibbert up a little bit more by playing, I think, Frost down back, but hasn't quite panned out the last 2 weeks.
I made the move on Hibbo after round two before price changes. Took the opportunity to move him on to Bonner, who also hasn't been particularly good, but probably averaging about the same as Hibbard.
Yeah, Hibbard's actually averaging three less than Bonner, and I can tell you that because they're both in my side still. being the stubborn person I am, I still do have Hibbard. At this stage, I think I'm going to ride him out a little bit longer, mainly because I'm just too stubborn to actually trade him out, I think.
I don't think it's an awful average for a defender. You would have liked him to start off with bigger scores and not be an early sort of upgrade target. But certainly when you look at a player and you think, the blokes that don't have him considering him a bargain and potentially going to bring him in? And if the answer to that question is yes, then you should be even more hesitant to trade him out, especially if you've already experienced the pain of his price movements, being now sort of 66K cheaper than what CJ traded him out at. So I almost agree with you there, Dunny. Even though he's not been ideal, you're almost priced into riding him out as a selection. And when you trade a bloke out at 480K, it's not like you're getting to save a whole bunch of that value. Like, he's probably priced at about an average of 80, high 80s at the moment.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Maybe low 90s, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right with that. I think, yeah, you've already lost the money. You're not going to gain anything. And just looking at my back eight, yes, he's the second lowest average in my back eight behind players like Murray and Doudé and Finlayson. Awesome.
All right, we'll move on to this next question from Tony from Twitter. And he's asking whether or not it's time to move Bonner on. He's a pretty fresh entrant to a lot of teams, having only been traded in on the bubble a couple of weeks ago. I'm personally not looking to trade him out yet. He's still averaging 81. My main concern is what will happen when Pittard inevitably comes back into the team over the next couple of weeks. But if he's still getting named, I'll probably still keep him until I'd like to get 400K out of Bono if I can, or at least more than the low 300s. He's only really gone up like 40, 50K off his starting price.
Still, his break-even's still 58, so it's still quite attainable. And if he has another big score or two, I think he can easily move up to that high 300s.
More than anything, it's just that Port Adelaide have been a bit ordinary in the last couple of weeks. I mean, obviously, we lost pretty badly to the Bombers, and thank God Faz and Mark aren't on tonight. But, yeah, we were also very ordinary against Brisbane. Yeah, I think it's more just the pressure and just the poor way that the team played in those two games that have cost him points. I think he's going to sit around the mid-70s to probably mid-80s is probably about the range I think that he'll score at going forward. They do like him. They do like having the footy in his hands. And I wouldn't be so confident. I don't think that Pittard will just walk straight back into this team either. I think they like the way Bonner uses the footy, whereas Pittard can tend to burn the footy a bit much. That's just my opinion as a supporter, but, you know, that's what I sort of see happening.
Big call there, Dunny.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I do like Pittard, but he does seem to spray it a bit, whereas Bonner, his disposal does seem to be a little bit better and a bit cleaner.
Yeah, more considered at least, because Pittard has great foot skills, but then just does some interesting...
Poor decision-making.
Yeah.
It's almost ambitious, like too ambitious. You're like, oh, I've got such a great kick. Let me try this out. And you're like, what was that, mate? Just simpler targets. All right, next question here is from Emily on Facebook. What to do if Kelly is out for another week? How long to hold him for? I think the talk was one, maybe two. Even if he misses this week, you still keep. I think even if he misses the week after next, like, because it's a week-to-week proposition, kind of stuck in a tricky situation there. But for a three-week short-term injury, in a lot of cases you keep if you're reasonably sure that they're going to end up being a top X contender. And in the midfield, Kelly still, I would consider a top eight mid, so I wouldn't be rushing.
Hasn't had the hottest start to the year, but that could have been because he had a couple of niggles and wasn't quite up to it. He's still at 600K. He's averaged 105, which is not the end of the world. I'd be hanging on to if I had him.
Next question's from Scott McNaughton on Facebook. Zorko's killing him. What options are there? CJ, I know you have Zorko. Not a whole bunch of our listeners have him, so I just thought I'd keep him in there because you...
Thanks. Just because you like to rub it in, yeah. Thanks, Marcus. I really, really appreciate the understanding. It's very nice of you.
So you've already mentioned you're thinking about trading him out.
Yeah.
He has dropped 80K already. Does that factor into your consideration at all? Are you that certain he's not going
to
work out?
I don't tend to look at price movement the same way you do. I tend to just evaluate things on a week-by-week basis. I tend to think looking at past price changes is a good way to get caught in the sunk cost fallacy. So I tend to just look at what they're priced at now and if there's anyone attractive in the same kind of ballpark of price. The main player I'm looking at trading him to is actually really just going full mid-price and trading him to Jaeger Amira. But it's also Monday and I'm also still smarting from the 32 he scored in week one. So, I mean, I could come to my senses and not trade him out.
Yeah, look, I think if you already kept him for two extra weeks, then you're a little bit more priced into keeping him. I know that you don't want to compound your mistakes, but you made a conscious choice to keep him after a 32, and that wasn't an injury-affected 32. So You'd already accepted slightly lower scores in the hope he'd turn things around. And 92-82 are obviously not great, but it's only a sample size of four. He's an explosive player that can do, you know, a run of 120 or 130 across 4, 6, 8 weeks, which we've seen him done before. So I don't know if I'd be a massive advocate for trading him out, but if I was going to, it'd definitely be to either a must-have player or a player that has dropped a lot in price that offers value. Trading to Elliot Yeo, who's also created in price a little bit. He's at 490, and he's probably, you know, a top three defender. Or Robbie Gray, a bloke you might not want to miss out in a forward line. So I think I'd only really move him on if it were to an underpriced player or a player that you might be upset to miss out on. All right, this next question here is from Adam Stewart on Twitter, and he's asking what to do with David Armitage. And he's mentioned that you can't really afford to upgrade. Now, Dunny, you had Armo when we recorded the show last week, but I'm not sure if you've traded him out or not. I know we recommended holding, but his late out being dropped certainly would have changed calculations a little bit. What did you end up doing with him, mate?
Absolutely. Last week on the show, I did say that, yep, I was going to hold him, no questions asked, and then he didn't make the team sheet and he was gone.
Nice.
So,
good call.
Yeah, and that's the sort of thing, you know, yes, I'm all for holding these guys, but I couldn't afford to hold him because I would have probably played Brayshaw on field for his 42, which I wasn't really keen on doing. So, yeah, I ended up trading him out, and through a bit of DPP work, I actually ended up trading him down to a rookie. I went down to Jake Waterman, which seems a bit strange, but what it's done is it's earned me some cash. It bought me in a rookie who was immediately going up in price and did and will keep going up. So a bit of short-term pain for a bit of longer-term gain, hopefully.
Probably question will be whether or not he comes back into the team this week.
He was named in the best for the twos.
I mean, if he comes back into the team, you've held on to him for the week off. I think you're more likely to hold on and see what he can muster with a week spent in the VFL and hurting a little bit, I assume. You know, hopefully he comes back and scores a 110. If he doesn't come back into the team, you definitely trade him. And depending on what your cash situation is like, you'll either be hamstrung into side swapping, in which case you don't have a huge amount of options. If you had enough money, you could potentially go up to Amira, but that
Still requires 70K.
Yeah, so it's still not ideal. I think I'd be most happy with downgrading him like you did, Dunny.
Yeah, I think Armitage to Coffeedles is a good option this week.
Exactly what I was going to say, mate. I think that would be a great move.
All right, next question here is from Sniffmo on Facebook. He made a big mistake and didn't trade Cruiser out last week. He was hoping his injury would improve, but looks like he's still hurting and a little bit sore and is a bit limited by his groin at the moment. It's kind of a tough spot, but he's only dropped the 60K, so he's still priced at 540, which is not too bad. His break even...
173.
Very high, so if you want to trade him, this week is definitely the week to do it. He plays West Coast against Nick Nat this week. So
he'll score well for about 40% of the game.
Yeah, Nick Nat's not been an easy ruckman to go up against in the first four rounds. So, look, I don't actually mind trading him out. And a big reason for that is part two of Sniffmo's question, and that we trade him to Grundy. Grundy is just killing it and killing it with Cox in the side as well. There's Grundy averaging about 130 from the first three games. There's Gorn at about 116, and then there's...
Sinclair's the next best ruckman, surprisingly, at 110.
There's still a fair bit of daylight between them and the rest. Four games in is a short sample size, but they definitely look like the top two rucks for the year. And so, you know, we talk about setting and forgetting in the rucks, and we talk about it being a defining part of the ground. I actually really don't mind the Cruiser to Grundy trade at all. It only costs you 70K. So if you've got the cash to make it, it seems like a pretty good one to me. I don't know if that's been too reactive for a four-game sample size or not, but 139, 154, 141, three massive games in a row.
Cruiser could definitely come good. I think there's a reason everyone or a lot of people picked him at the start of the year, is he has shown that he can be in the top couple of rucks when he's fully fit. The issue is he's not fully fit at the moment, and I think trading him out after he was injured or after he came back and didn't play particularly well was probably the right option. I think if you still had him, I'd be very tempted to go to Grundy, but I wouldn't look at trading him to anybody else.
Yeah, you either keep or you trade to Grundy, essentially.
Yeah.
Just something to note that if you haven't played Supercoach for too long, we haven't dealt with players playing through a groin injury before. They are limiting and debilitating injuries that don't keep you off the ground, but certainly keep you very restricted while you're on ground, and your scoring certainly takes a hit. It's not something that you can necessarily play through with more time. You kind of need to either rest, recuperate, get a little bit less sore and score more points, or trudge your way through the season and play a little bit more limited. So that's the only worry of keeping Cruiser, but he's certainly not a must trade out. But if you can find a way to trade to Grundy, it certainly seems like a decent option there. Now we've got another ruckman to talk about, and this question is from Stephen, one of our Patreons, asking about what to do with Goldstein. Goldstein, a couple of very disappointing weeks, 60 last week, 76 this week, played against a sore Cruiser, so there's really no reason for that type of scoring. I am extremely concerned, and there is a reasonable chance that I will be trading him out this week. He's got a pretty high break even.
155,
CJ just mentioned, that I don't know if I want to sort of sit through the pain of. He's playing McAvoy this week, who's a good ruckman. Magic Dawes been in the team. But Stephen did bring up a good point that he has played some decent ruckmen. I mean, Cruz was obviously sore, but he's also played against Gorn and Steph. So that should provide some ray of hope that he hasn't had the easiest ruck opposition to face up against in the first four rounds. Dunny, you've got Jacobs, and CJ, you have Nick Nat, so neither of you are facing this pain. I'm hoping for an impartial view. What do you reckon? Are you more or less likely to trade him than Cruiser?
I think for me, I'd be more likely to trade Cruiser than Goldstein, just solely because difference in price. Cruiser's still at 543, and I think you've got a bit more value there. It might be a bit easier for a lot of people to trade out a Cruiser than a Goldstein, given you're another 50K shorter. I still think I'd be heavily considering trading Goldstein to Grundy this week, though, given how good Grundy looks, and the fact that Dawe seems to be pinching in the ruck a bit more, and Goldstein's scoring with either Dawe or Bruce in this side seems to have been heavily limited. It seems like one of those, a bit like a unicorn, where he only plays well when he's the only ruckman. I'd probably be looking at trading him to Grundy this week if you could find the cash.
Yeah, Goldstein to Grundy looks like a really good move to me. I think, you know, you're going to get a lot more points. He's struggling a bit. I'm actually thinking of doing Jacobs to Grundy myself this week, to be honest, because Jacobs just hasn't worked out how I'd hoped. I thought he was going to be a bit more dominant around the ground, but he just doesn't seem to be getting there either. So I don't mind the move.
All right, on to the next question. This one's from Kyle Grender, and he's asking about Jack Billings. He's probably been one of the least performing, highly selected players so far for season 2018. His last 3 weeks have delivered 70, a 50, and a 60. Definitely not ideal for a bloke that started the season with high hopes, but it's just sort of all gone pear-shaped. And I think the issue is less Billings, but just the team that he plays for. Against Geelong, whenever the ball came into his vicinity, he actually did pretty decently with it. But the problem was, just never saw the ball.
He's definitely looked good in patches. He scored very well in the first game of the year. He's still averaging 82.5, and he's still in 23% of teams. So I think the reasons to trade him out are, it does turn him into a bit of a point of difference not having him, because I believe pretty much every man and his dog started with Billings this year. It was a very popular selection in our community, and I know in a few of the other communities as well. I'm toying with the idea of trading him out, particularly given how good Robbie Gray looked, but then again, I have other issues in my side, namely one Zorko. Break-even's 149, so he's going to drop quite a bit again, and he's playing GWS this week, so it's another reasonable reason to trade him out. I think if you want to trade him out, this is the week to do it, but I by no means think you absolutely have to.
After GWS, they have Hawks in Tasmania, Melbourne at Etihad, Frio away, Collingwood, Richmond, West Coast, and then Sydney. I mean, the comp, so even this year, it looks like everyone has a tough draw, but certainly not an easy draw, not for a team that's already struggling. So I think the reasons to keep are there, the reasons to trade are there. I don't think at 450K, if you trade him out, you're necessarily going to win a huge amount. Like, he's probably going to score pretty close to his current price point. For me, the question's more around whether or not you want to trade somebody in. So I'd be most willing to trade Billings out to a must-have. And there's one clear front-runner in that camp at the moment, and that's Robbie Gray. After missing round one with suspension, he's gone 100, 100, and then 140 on the weekend. So if you have the 80K to do that little upgrade, if you're trading Caulfield down for Brayshaw and got 40K elsewhere, that might not be too bad a selection.
I think I agree there.
Dunny, do you consider Gray a must-have? Are you looking at trading out Billings at all, or will you hold fat, being a stubborn man, as you put it?
Yeah, I'll probably be holding Billings, I think. I do like Robbie Gray, not just because he's a power player, but I think he certainly is a great selection that we probably should be looking to get in. Personally, I'm starting to sort of plan to get him in at round 11 after he's had that awkward round 10 bye.
All right, we'll move on to potential trade-in targets now. This question's again from Charles Herzog, one of our patrons, and he's asking about Zach Merritt and whether or not he's still high in our consideration set. 493,000, having dropped another 20K off his initial 80K drop after the first round. Essendon won against Port, which you actually foreshadowed a bit on the podcast, unfortunately for yourself last week, Dunny, but a 107 and a win later, things are looking a lot more optimistic around Essendon and around Zach Merritt. And with a break even of 130 this week, he could actually be a legitimate trade in this week. I don't think you have to wait the extra week if you wanted to bring a bloke like Merritt in, although his price certainly won't escape you next week if you needed to wait the extra week. Thoughts on Merritt and concerns about his tag or the threat of a tag moving forward? Dunny, would you avoid at this price point, or is the risk sort of factored into the price to a significant enough degree to buy him into your team?
I think if you told me before the season started that I could pick up Zach Merritt for under 500K at round four, I would have said, yep, no worries, sign me up. But at this point, I think I'll actually be waiting another week before I consider bringing him in. I think he's still a top player, and I think he is still very much worth having in our sides at some point this year, but I want to see another week out of him. Port were very ordinary on the weekend, which you're right, I did foreshadow. Every time I go over to Melbourne to see Port play Essendon at Etihad, I'm always disappointed, so that's why I don't go to see that anymore. But yeah, I think I want to see a little bit more from Zach. And you're right, I think with his break even at 130, I don't think he's going to smash that in any way. So you're not going to lose out by just waiting for that one more week of data to see how he scores this week.
CJ, Zorko to Merritt, locked in?
I wouldn't say locked in. I think we can probably segue quite nicely into our next question here. We'll talk about the other guy I'm considering, which is from Alexander Lewis, a Patreon. Is there any merit in bringing Jaeger in now with a break even of negative 18? If he scores well / stays fit, he could be a keeper or an easy write-up to Dangerfield and co. I think Jaeger is someone that I've been looking pretty seriously at. But I think Marcus probably has a bit more to say about that than I do.
Yeah, I mean, that just seems very, very fraught with risk because Merritt cost 100K more. Like, and Omir is a bloke that I know through the conversations we've had, you've talked about him still being a step ladder. So between a bloke that is likely to be a keeper and has averaged 110 two seasons in a row at 100K more versus a bloke that you might be able to squeeze another 100K from but might require trading later on, it just seems like a hard selection to make. I mean, he looked great, but after 140, everyone looks great. Like, Gray looks great. Like, everyone we're talking about as potential must trade ins, Grundy. Like, after 140, it looks great. But that's the first time Amir has done that in a very, very long time. And they beat Melbourne by 50 points on a day where they decided to tag Titchell. And Titchell's only really had that hard tack once in the last four rounds. Like, when he's stealing all the points away from Amira, that selection also looks a little bit worse. Look, I don't think it's an awful pick. I just think I always struggle with blokes at around the 400K mark. I started two at 450, being Cogs and Libber. Cogs had averaged 105 before and still had upward trajectory, and Libber had averaged 109 for two seasons. But Amira hasn't quite done that, and I'm wary of a 400K step ladder.
The other issue is if he does start to catch fire, do people just start tagging him instead of Titchell because he's a bit more damaging by foot? Mitchell still managed to rack up 27 touches the weekend despite copying a very heavy tag. So
90% of them contested too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very impressive.
I don't think Omira is going to maintain anywhere near
140.
Yeah, 140. Well, or even like a 120. I think you can look at him as a potential. The thing I like about him is he does potentially slot into M8 until the bye rounds, and then you can trade him out for another premium around then. That's what I'd be looking at. I think having grown up playing Supercoach when we had 20 trades, conservation of trades was key. But I think last year I finished the season with a few trades at my sleeve that I wish I'd burned a bit earlier, so that's kind of nagging in the back of my mind a little bit.
All right, we'll move on to the last section for the weekend, as we do each week, go through with a captain's corner. Dunny, why don't you start us off, mate? Who are you considering for your VCNC for the week?
I'm a little hamstrung a bit this week because my two loophole options are playing in the Friday night game, being Murphy and Cameron. So that's going to make that a little tricky for me. But assuming Dom Barry doesn't play again, that might help me a little bit. So if I have to use Dom Barry on the Saturday night, I'm going to do a little something a little bit weird here, and I'm going to consider Cornelio against St Kilda for my VC and play him into either a Tom Mitchell against North Melbourne or a Dusty against Melbourne. And after seeing what Nathan Jones did to Mitchell, I'm probably tempted to go Mitchell against North as my captain. But it's not an easy week this week to pull a loophole off, I don't think. CJ, what are you thinking, mate?
The other guy I'd consider playing on the Friday night is Rory Laird. He's averaging 122. He's getting a heap of the ball. There's really no one taking points off him in that back line. For me, it's probably, yeah, between Laird or Cornelio. Patrick Cripps, if you're quick on the trigger finger, playing against West Coast, could be a decent option.
I don't mind the Laird selection there, CJ. Probably the guy I'll end up locking in is Cornelio, and then the sneaky ones, maybe Heaney. Just the time he spends up forward means that if he kicks a few goals, he's also a chance for a bigger game. And Adelaide are struggling a little bit. For the captaincy, I'm obviously going to have to go with Martin because I don't have another option. But Fife would also be another decent consideration there. But only 101 last week. His big scores have actually only been that one big 160, whereas Martin's had, you know, four scores above 140. All right. And with that, that wraps up the Round 5 podcast. Thank you very much for joining us for another episode. And to CJ, who hasn't joined us for a while, thanks. Good to have you on, mate.
Pleasure.
And Dunny, as always, brilliant to have you on. I think last week we mentioned that you'd actually get the week off this week, but Faz had an emergency sort of funeral to attend, unfortunately, for him. And thank you very much for stepping in his absence at late notice, mate.
I think it might also be to do with the fact that we had a lot of Port Adelaide players to talk about this week, so we put the call out to Dunny.
Seems
like all we've talked about is Port Adelaide players and Dan Zorko.
So. I'm happy to talk about I'm happy to talk Port Adelaide all night if you guys would like, but no problem stepping in, mate. Always happy to help out.
For our listeners, Mark has been gone for a couple of weeks. He'll be returning to the podcast next week, so you can look forward to that and hearing his bragging of how much he's beaten me since he's last been on the show, unfortunately for myself, and I'm not looking forward to that. And with that, we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
Bye.
See you guys. Jump on, make it crazy.